Welcome to Love's Tender Flame, Tales of Romance. I'm Mardell, reading Mother by Kathleen Norris. Chapter 4. But Margaret's turn did not come for nearly a year. Then in Germany again, and lingering at a great Berlin hotel because the spring was so beautiful and the city so sweet with linden bloom, and especially because there were two Americans at the hotel whose game of bridge it pleased Mr. and Mrs. Carbolt daily to hope they could match. Then Margaret was transformed within a few hours from a merely pretty, very dignified, perfectly contented secretary, entirely satisfied with what she wore as long as it was suitable and fresh, into a living woman whose cheeks paled and flushed at nothing but her thoughts, who laughed at herself in her mirror, loitered over her toilet, trying one gown after another, and walked half-smiling through a succession of rosy dreams. It all came about very simply. One of the aforementioned bridge players wondered if Mrs. Carbolt and her niece, oh, wasn't it, her secretary then, would like to hear a very interesting young American professor lecture this morning. Wondered when they were fanning themselves in the airy lecture room if they would care to meet Professor Tennyson. "You're all alone in the world, Miss Page?" He was eyeing her amusingly. The direct question came quite naturally. "Oh, dear me, no. My father and mother are living." And feeling as she always did a little claim on her loyalty, she added, "We are, or were rather, Southern people. But my father settled in a very small New York town." "Mrs. Carbolt told me that. I'd forgotten," said Professor Tennyson. And he carried the matter entirely out of Margaret's hands. Much, much further indeed than she would have carried it by continuing. "She tells me that Quincyport was named for your mother's grandfather, and that Judge Paget was your father's father."
"Father's uncle," Margaret corrected, although as a matter of fact Judge Paget had been no nearer than her father's second cousin.
"But father always called him uncle," Margaret assured herself inwardly. To the Quincyport claim she said nothing. Quincyport was in the county that mother's people had come from. Quincy was a very unusual name, and the original Quincy had been a Charles, which was certainly one of mother's family names. Margaret and Julie, browsing about among the colonial histories and genealogies of the Weston Public Library years before, had come to a jubilant certainty that mother's grandfather must have been the same man. But she did not feel quite so positive now.
"Your people aren't still in the South, you said?"
"Oh, no," Margaret cleared her throat. "They're in Weston, New York."
"Weston, not near Dayton."
"Why, yes. Do you know Dayton?"
"Do I know Dayton?" He was like an eager child. "Why, my Aunt Pamela lives there, the only mother I ever knew. I know Weston, too, a little. Lovely homes there, some of them, old colonial houses. And your mother lives there? Is she fond of flowers?"
"She loves them," Margaret said, vaguely uncomfortable.
"Well, then she must know Aunt Pamela," said John Tennyson enthusiastically. "I expect they'd be great friends. And you must know Aunt Pam. She's like a dainty old piece of china, or a tea rose. She's never married, and she lives in the most charming brick house, with brick walls and hollyhocks all about it, and such an atmosphere inside. She has an old maid and an old gardener, and don't you know, she's the sort of woman who likes to sit down under a portrait of your great-grandfather in a dim parlor full of mahogany and rose jars, with her black silk skirts spreading about her, and an old blue cup in her hand, and talk family, how cousin this married a man whose people aren't anybody, and Cousin That is outraging President by naming her child for her husband's side of the house. She's a funny, dear old lady. You know Miss Paget? The professor went on with his eager, impersonal air. When I met you, I thought you didn't quite seem like a New Yorker and a Bar Harborer, if that's the word. Aunt Pam, you know, she's my only mother. I got all my early knowledge from her. Aunt Pam detests the usual New York girl. And the minute I met you, I knew she'd like you. You'd sort of fit into the Dayton picture with your braids and those ruffly things you wear. Margaret said simply, I would love to meet her, and began slowly to draw on her gloves. It surely was not requisite that she should add, but you must not confuse my home with any such exquisitely ordered existence as that. We are poor people. Our house is crowded. Our days a severe and endless struggle with the ugly things of life. We have good blood in our veins, but not more than hundreds of thousands of other American families. My mother would not understand one-tenth of your aunt's conversation. Your aunt would find very uninteresting the things that are vital to my mother. No, she couldn't say that. She picked up her dashing little hat and pinned it over her loosened, soft mass of yellow hair and buttoned up her storm coat and plunged her hands deep in her pockets. No, the professor would call on her at Bar Harbor, take a yachting trip with the car bolts, perhaps, and then, when they were really good friends, someday she would ask. Mother to have a simple little luncheon, and Mrs. Carr Bolt would let her bring Dr. Tennyson down in the motor from New York. And meantime, no need to be too explicit. For just 2 happy weeks, Margaret lived in Wonderland. The 14 days were a revelation to her. Life seemed to grow warmer, more rosy-colored. Little things became significant. Every moment carried its freight of joy. Her beauty, always notable, became almost startling. There was a new glow in her cheeks and lips, a new fire in the dark-lashed eyes that were so charming a contrast to her bright hair. Like a pair of joyous and irresponsible children, she and John Tennyson walked through the days, too happy ever to pause and ask themselves whither they were going. Then, abruptly, it ended. Victoria, brought down from school in Switzerland with various indications of something wrong, was in a flash a sick child, a child who must be hurried home to the only surgeon in whom Mrs. Carr Bolt placed the least trust. There was hurried packing, telephoning, wiring. It was only a few hours after the great German physician's diagnosis that they were all at the railroad station, breathless, nervous, eager to get started. Dr. Tennyson accompanied them to the station, and in the 5 minutes' wait before their train left, a little incident occurred, the memory of which clouded Margaret's dreams for many a day to come. Arriving as they were departing were the St. George Allens, noisy, rich, arrogant New Yorkers for whom Margaret had a special dislike. The Allens fell joyously upon the Carr Bolt party with a confusion of greetings. "And Jack Tennyson!" shouted Lily Allen delightedly. "Well, what fun! What are you doing here?" "I'm feeling a little lonely," said the professor, smiling at Mrs. Carr Bolt. "Nothing like that. Unsay them words," said Maud Allen cheerfully. "Mama, make him dine with us. Say you will." "I assure you I was dreading the lonely evening," John Tennyson said gratefully. Margaret's last glimpse of his face was between Lily's pink and cherry hat and Maud's astonishing headgear of yellow straw, gold braid, spangled quills, and calla lilies. She carried a secret heartache through the worried fortnight of Victoria's illness and the busy days that followed. For Mrs. Carr Bolt had one of many nervous breakdowns and took her turn at the hospital when Victoria came home. For the first time in 5 happy years, Margaret drooped. And for the first time, a longing for money and power of her own gnawed at the girl's heart. If she had but her share of these things, she could hold her own against 100 Maud and Lily Allens. As it was, she told herself a little bitterly, she was only a secretary, one of the 100 paid dependents of a rich woman. She was only, after all, a little middle-class country school teacher. Please join me next time on Love's Tender Flame for another romantic chapter of Mother by Kathleen Thompson Norris. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.